Let's humble our hearts before Almighty God. Kind Father in heaven, we come before you on this day, and we thank you for your Sabbath day and for the brethren gathered here and those that are scattered throughout the world who are in your unity today and understanding the precepts that are being taught today as they keep your fourth commandment to become more faithful to you, to leave aside the cares and worries and work of this world and come focus on you for an entire day. This is what we enjoy, and this is your command for us. And we thank you, Almighty Yahweh. We ask that you guide us and strengthen us and be with us as we go through this world on the road to the kingdom, so that one day we can stand and be with Yahshua as he raises us to be with him in his kingdom. And this prayer we ask in his name, Yahshua the Messiah. Hallelujah. You may be seated. This past week, we got a telephone call from a lady who informed us that the Apostle Paul is no longer to be taken seriously, that he brought in a bunch of spurious things, teachings, and so forth, and that for various reasons, he's no longer important. I guess we just throw him out of the Bible. Various reasons she gave were actually quite bogus. And one of the reasons was that he wasn't one of the 12 apostles. And so because he wasn't one of the 12, he's no longer to be considered. I don't know where in the scripture it says there has to be 12, but she had some other reasons too, all of which mean nothing in the big scheme of things, and it's all contrived ideas of men. But you find this a lot. People want to throw out this apostle, and they have their reasons. Of all the writers of the Bible, none has been more misunderstood, I believe, than this man from Tarsus, a man who's responsible for 15 of the 27 books of the scriptures. Churchianity looks to him as single-handedly cutting the church away from the Old Testament, along with the obligation to continue in the faith of the fathers who were obedient to Almighty Yahweh. I mean, it's clear. You can see it all over the scriptures. It's not a problem to discern. But to them, Paul, he is a man who came to enforce a new era, begin a new grace over obedience, teaching and doctrine, love over law, faith over works. They believe this converted Jew came to wrest the true faith from the clutches of its Hebraic roots and to establish a westernized, Grecianized religion. For more than a century, some scholars have claimed that he should be considered as the second founder of Christianity because of his teachings and how he has been seen by this movement. Without a gross misunderstanding, or I should say with a misinterpretation of Paul, the distinctive teachings of today's church may never have developed. You know, the core of all that Yahshua taught, everything in the background, the wallpaper, so to speak, of what Yahshua taught in his teachings as he walked this earth, everything back there, always in his mind, was the kingdom. The kingdom of Almighty Yahweh. His kingdom message was there. In his model prayer, he asked that the kingdom come to earth. People will recite this prayer and gloss right over that phrase, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Don't even give it a second thought. They're not conformed to it. They're not in touch with what Yahshua had to say. But he says his people are not of this world. It has nothing for his people. They are not to be conformed. They are not to have its goals as their goals. They live a different life, and they want a different result out of life, something a lot more important than this transient world. Well, they know that society is controlled by the evil one and is opposed to what Yahweh's people seek for. Because of the coming kingdom, our desire is for the king. And for that reason, we live a life that would please him of obedience. It's why we learn his laws. Why we learn of his Sabbath and holy days, each of which teaches an aspect of that coming kingdom. You can't understand it if you don't have these things. Salvation of a kingdom where all these days will be observed. He said it will be. in the coming kingdom in the future, just ahead of us. He's going to have all these things reinstituted. Why? Why then are they ignored today? You'll never hear people talk about that in common worship today. Never. Because of the kingdom message, we conform to his will and seek to be found worthy in his eyes. And really, what we're doing here is to learn to think like, act like, and be like Yahshua the Messiah. They teach about Yahshua, but they don't teach what Yahshua taught. It's about the kingdom, brethren. Yahshua prayed, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. This is his goal, his kingdom to come to this earth. For more than a century, some scholars have claimed that Paul either should have been taken out or remain where he was. And they misuse him, many do, to teach what he didn't teach. They've completely gut the essence of what Yahshua taught and leave those teachings nothing more than a hollow shell because they don't teach what he taught. They just teach about him. Sure, Yahshua's death and resurrection paved the way and made salvation possible for all. We know that. We know that. That's fundamental. But then what? What comes next? What is the purpose of all of this? What is the purpose of life? Why are we here? That's where churchianity's message stops. It's like you're going to take a trip. You get in your car, pack it all up, get ready to go, get out to the end of the driveway, and you stop. End of your trip. You talk about going to wherever you're going, maybe to some theme park or some vacation spot. You talk about it and live for it. You work toward it. You go out to the end of the driveway and you stop. Doesn't make much sense, does it? But that's what happens today, over and over again. They talk about getting into the kingdom, but they don't tell what's beyond. They don't teach what's next. What's the next step? Because they never go past the, quote, pearly gates, they eliminate the purpose for obedience and the ultimate reason why we live a life of obedience. You see, that's why they stop. Because if you want to go beyond that, then you've got to start doing something in your life in preparation for that. You have to start being obedient to Yahweh's word. The scriptures are clear that to be in his kingdom, we must be prepared. They preach, thy kingdom come, and they don't know or understand what is coming. Well, I hope we do. I hope that's what our goal is. I'd like you to turn to Psalm chapter 19, one of the great law psalms. We put Yahweh's word into practice now. Why? How does it prepare us for rulership with Yahshua here on earth? And that's another rarity in today's message. You don't hear about ruling here on earth. You hear about being left alone. Here's a place you don't want to be, left alone here on earth. And yet, this is the place where Yahshua is going to come. Psalm 19, verse 7, the law of Yahweh is perfect. What does it do? It converts the soul. It converts the soul. It changes your way of thinking. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making wise the simple. If they teach Yahweh's laws today in schools and in the culture, they'd be wise. They wouldn't have these problems we have now. It's getting worse and worse. The statutes of Yahweh are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of Yahweh is pure. It enlightens the eyes. Why? Because there is an ultimate right and wrong, which people don't want to hear about today. The fear of Yahweh is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of Yahweh are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. There's a reward for obedience. We had a joke back in my old newspaper days. If you want to hide something, put it in the newspaper. Same is even true, I think, of the scriptures. You want to hide it, no one's going to read it in here. If they do happen to stumble upon a pearl of enlightenment, they would bring them in line with the word, and the blind guides just want to explain it away. Oh, that's Old Testament. That's works righteousness. We're under grace. You're a legalist, by the way, and they turn and attack you. And they say it with animosity and with contempt. Almost as if there's a guilty conscience there. Why do they constantly hammer on the need that we don't need to obey? It's, you know, the old saying, he protests too much. Why do you think they're trying to obey the one you worship is so bad? Take your pick of any one of those old tired excuses whose purpose is to rein people back from bridging the gap of truth and putting them back under church error. Why can't the religious establishment for once, ever seem to break free from the darkness and teach what Yahshua himself taught? Well, Yahweh tells us why. Psalm 111, verse 10. They know what would happen if you start teaching the truth. Because you can't have the truth if you do not have obedience along with it. It says, the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. You'd have a good understanding. Why is it people write to us and say, we get this almost every week. What Bible do you use? As if somehow we've been enlightened by a special Bible somewhere where these truths just pop out at you. Yahweh says if you keep his laws and his statutes, you have a good understanding. He'll give you more light and it'll come right out at you. You don't have to grope around and, you know, go to these secular scholars like they always do on, the History Channel or whatever. They're going to tell about something back in Egypt or the Dead Sea or something and, try to explain away manna by something that falls on some leaves of some tree. That's really what it was and all this crazy stuff. Just take it for what it says. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 11. It says, as you know how we exhorted and comforted you and charged every one of you as a father does his children, that you would walk worthy of Elohim, who has called you unto his kingdom and glory. Well, let's find out what this is. Does Paul ignore these elements of Yahshua's teachings? Let's see if all that he taught was love and grace. He's already been misunderstood and misinterpreted grossly. And the impact has been catastrophic. Old Testament teachings that should have continued on in the New Testament in greater glory and so forth suddenly been stopped. It's as if a whole new religion suddenly took place in the book of Acts. And when Paul hit the evangelistic trail, today, I'd like to lay that falsehood to rest by looking at the man blamed for this supposed change as well as his message. What so many are taught is that we have in this one book two opposite sections. We got the old, and then we have the new. And there is a dynamic tension between the two. Like, they really don't belong together. And you got to get rid of that first part, that Old Testament. I'm surprised they don't put a modern Bible together with a divider and with a caution sign saying, caution, part one is a Christian-free zone. That's the Old Testament. Caution part two is not for Jewish eyes. Why don't they do that? And why do they keep putting them together in one book? Why don't they just throw out the old and just have a New Testament? Because they don't want to read the old and don't want to study it. I guess they just want it for a few cute stories for children. You know, back about Daniel and David and a few of these other things. But they don't want to take it seriously. The fact is the Old Testament and the New Testament are entirely compatible. They go together like hand and glove. And each is essential to understanding the other. In a nutshell, in the Old Testament, we find a people known as Israel, given a covenant promise. Yahweh says, I'll work with you people. Nobody else wants to work with me. I'm choosing you. I'm choosing you. And you're going to understand my purposes. You're going to understand my design for this world. And you're going to be my people. And all the others are going to see what it's like if you be obedient to me. You're going to see the blessings. If you will. If you don't, you're going to see curses. But if you will, you'll be blessed. In the New Testament, the same promise is there. In a renewed covenant, having the same basic terms. Yet the blessings are far greater. These extend beyond just here in this land. This goes all the way to the kingdom, into a millennial rule. Today's covenant is still built on obedience. Same thing, same promise, basically, and same conditions. That's biblical fact. You can hang your hat on that. The picture most people have is quite different. They see the Old Testament as a harsh body of stringent laws that just oppress you like you're some kind of slave, and regulations and a demanding creator, and they're willing to wipe out any who refuse to obey, and you're gone, and it's, you know. Then, realizing his mistake, Yahweh started all over with a New Testament and goofed up. So he's going to make it right. Now you don't have to obey anymore. That's all gone. We have a new regime, new agenda now. Love and grace is all you have to have. Which part of that makes any sense? Well, we need to go right to the source of so many misconceptions and look at the man himself, the man named Paul. Let's take a look at the real Shaul and see whether the faith that was given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has any place in New Testament understanding and teachings. Let's begin with his autobiography, Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, the man is explaining himself. And he begins, verse 5. He said, I was circumcised the eighth day of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews. Circumcised the eighth day, just as the law said. Remember, Genesis 17:12. You shall circumcise on the eighth day. Abraham did, Isaac, in 21:4 of Genesis. So he was also circumcised the eighth day. Wait a minute, that's Old Testament again. You know, here we are. We got a problem. Is this man or is this man not following the Old Testament and doing what it says? Looks to me like he is. So literally, the Greek, Hebrews, where he says he's the stock of Benjamin. We know that the Benjaminites and Judah were the southern tribe. And he proudly acknowledged that he was a Benjaminite, that he was faithful, that his father was a Hebrew, and he was a Hebrew. So here we have the man supporting that he's grounded in the Hebraic faith, and that's very important. The tribe of Benjamin had been faithful to the Davidic code and his throne when the kingdom was divided. In fact, it gave Israel its first king, Shaul, who happens to be the same guy we're talking about here, at least by name, Shaul. Hebrew of the Hebrews really means that neither parent was a Gentile. He retained the language of his fathers. Even though he settled in Tarsus, which was a Greek city, Paul calls himself a Hebrew. He says, as touching the law, a Pharisee. Well, they were the strictest law keepers around. You want to outdo a Pharisee, you've got to put your entire life into doing so. Because, believe me, they were the ones who would not let anything slip by when it came to the law. If you didn't, they would call your attention to it. Everything. I mean, right down to the nitty-gritty. These people were something else. And he says he was one of them. So, he was circumcised the eighth day, the stock of Israel. He was born a Hebrew. He wasn't mixed stock, as some were in the Holy Land at the time. He was also not a proselyte to the faith of Judaism. He was born into it. And this is very important. It'll bear on the fundamental view of this man and how he looks at truth, how he taught Scripture. It says, as touching the law, he was a Pharisee. He was a member of the strictest sects that made the law their whole life. How would you like that? Make the law your whole life. Well, essentially, that's what we do, isn't it? We do. We try to. We try to follow whatever Yahweh tells us to do. So that's what this man does, but they did it outwardly. I mean, you know, if they made a mistake, if you did something wrong, oh boy, you were going to hear about it. Because they were very adamant to have every dot and I dotted and T crossed. That's the way they were. Above all, they were what some people call legalists. They were purists when it came to the law. And one of the things a legalistic religion does is separate people into superior and inferior. And this is what Yahshua fought his whole time, trying to get these people to realize that it's not all about them, and it's not all about putting yourself over somebody else. But this man came from that stock. Okay, so we got this in our mind. This is the kind of guy he was. All right, he came from this type of background. Then in verse 6 it says, concerning zeal, he persecuted the assembly, touching the righteousness which is in the law, blameless. At least he thought he was blameless. He says, I was so zealous, I was so adamant in what I was doing that I would actually persecute people that didn't go along with this, that I thought was right and appropriate when it came to Yahweh's law. But what things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Messiah. Something happened in his life, something very dramatic. Doubtless, I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Messiah Yahshua, my master, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung. He finally got shaken loose from his, whatever you call this situation he's in, this obsession. And he said, it means nothing now. It means nothing now. Have you ever been in such a situation where your very life was threatened and you got out of it and things take a whole different perspective? Little things don't matter anymore. You can see a bigger picture and you're just glad you're alive. That's where this man was. He was knocked down. He was blinded for days. And finally, when a man restores his sight, he comes to his senses and realizes, hey, somebody's given me a message, and I better listen. He was unbelievably devout. Can you see why Yahweh would choose such a man? Somebody that had that kind of spunk? Sure. Real spark plug. A mover and a shaker. And when he did something, it was all the way or nothing. So he became the spokesman for this movement that Yahshua established here to bring a message of a kingdom to this earth, and that all people now could have a part in it. And he needed somebody to go out to the Gentiles and teach them. What is the new covenant? Is it a new way of worship? Throws out all the standards? We now just operate under love and grace, nothing to do but attend church for 20 minutes. And then live any way we please the rest of the week? Is that what the New Testament is all about? This is what most people view worship as today. That's what all it is. As long as I fill that pew, then I'm fine. You know, as long as I'm there and had my obligation and paid my penance, now I'm fine. Is that what it's all about? For many, this is what it is. We've been released from those harsh Old Testament laws, and now the Heavenly Father just loves us and hates that we would try to earn our way to the kingdom. It's a shallow faith to millions, an easy road, a broad way. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. A proper understanding of righteous living in the New Testament can be obtained by what Paul said about Old Testament feast called unleavened bread. You see, here is a lesson from a man who kept it, and he understood it. One that we're going to be keeping here not too many weeks hence. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump as you are unleavened. For Messiah, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Next verse. Therefore, let us keep the feast. Not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. There's a level of depth we're talking about here. We're talking about surface level, and then we're talking about going deeper into impacting how we feel and how we treat others. He writes to the people of Corinth, purge it out the old leaven. The new leaven goes further. It goes right to the core of righteousness. Rather than having bitterness or hatred, we show sincerity and truth, become honest in our walk, and follow truth. The old leaven was a type of glory, and it was focused on self. It was, hey, look at how righteous I am. I'm a Pharisee. I can outdo any law that you can give me, and you, nobody can touch me, and I can do it any better than anybody else. But under the new covenant, for which Paul became a chief spokesman, we see a sincere obedience, a whole different attitude toward Yahweh, and a humble obedience that went straight to that person's heart and made a change in the innermost being. And that is what Paul taught as a follower of Yahshua the Messiah. Notice he does not dispense with the feast. You see, they'll say, well, that's another Old Testament thing you don't have to worry about anymore. He says just the opposite. Let us keep the feast, but let's do it right now, in the right way. All through the New Testament we find feast keeping. And it just amazes me that you don't see anybody teaching this today. I mean, a few scatter groups here and there, but I'm talking about the major denominations, millions and millions of people, thousands and thousands of groups, and they're not even teaching the Bible. They're not even teaching what's here. What Yahweh wanted in the Old Testament, he wanted in the New Testament. And this is the key to the truth that people will not teach today. If they were honest, they would see the continuity from Genesis through Revelation. They would just sit down and not have a study about the Bible. They would study the Bible and just read it and then say, you know, I would like to just sit down, take 100 people, sit them down and say, okay, let's understand this book once and for all. And I want everybody to read this book. We're going to give you about a year. Take your time, read the book, and then we'll have a test. And I want to see just what you got out of it. Don't listen to anybody else. Don't listen to, somebody who's going to twist it up. Just read it and see what conclusion you come to. You can only come to the conclusion of Yahweh's truth. You only can come to one thing, that what was begun in the Old Testament is carried all the way through into the New and on into the kingdom. It's all there. You don't have to have someone saying, well, but, stop, stop, stop. You know, this is not any more applicable today. So amid all these laws and commands and rituals, we find the same personality traits expressed by Yahweh that are usually thought of as exclusive to the New Testament. Grace, mercy, long-suffering. We find all these things in the Old Testament. Keep in mind that what character traits the Son has, the Father has as well. Because Joshua says, you've seen me, you've seen the Father. One and the same, basically. We have the same mind. Now people mistake that and say, oh, he's one. No, he's just saying we have the same type of character and personality and the same goals and reason for being. He says in John 14, where he says, have I been so long time with you, and have you not known me, Philip? He that has seen me has seen the Father, and how say you then, show us the Father? Believe thou not that I am in the Father? He didn't say he was the Father. I am in the Father, and the Father in me. And that's basically what we're trying to do here, brethren. Get the Father in us, just as he was in Yahshua. Take his mind. Think like he does. You know, I always like to look at this issue in reverse, to look at the New Testament and see what's found there left over from the Old Testament. You'll see a lot. Galatians 3:8, where we see Abraham called, what is called the gospel, so to speak, evangel, was preached to Abraham. Instead of looking at the Old Testament teachings that no longer exist in the New Testament, sit down and list all the New Testament truths that are alive and well in the Old Testament. You'll see a whole different perspective. In other words, look at scriptures in reverse. If you do that, you will immediately see a harmony in the two. It's kind of like, I know my dad has always liked to, he said he always liked to take a magazine and start at the back. I don't know if that's kind of a sneaky way of looking at things or if it just gives him a different perspective. But do it that way and you'll see, hey, you know what? The Old Testament isn't that much different from the New because I see the same truths here. Did you know that love your neighbor is an Old Testament principle? Look at Leviticus 19:18 in that Torah, that law. You'll see it. In Deuteronomy 10:16, Jeremiah 4:4, we learn about circumcision of the heart. that most people think is just a New Testament teaching. It's right there in the Old Testament. Most people think that grace didn't come along until Yahshua brought it to us. It's not true. Not true at all. They couldn't be more wrong. Noah, Genesis 6:8, said, Yahweh said, I found grace in Yahweh's eyes. In the law books, Exodus 34:6-7, we see the twin principles of grace and mercy being taught to Moses on Mount Sinai. At the same time, he got the law. What's different? Nothing. Certainly, the Protestant reformers emphasized a fresh New Testament concept when they taught the doctrine of faith alone. Right? Wrong. Look back to the fifth book of the Bible. It shows that faith is an important virtue. Faith is an important virtue. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 20. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 20. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end shall be. For they are a very forward generation, children in whom is no faith. Looks like he was looking for faith in his people, doesn't it? And they didn't find it there. He didn't find it. But he was looking for faith. It's not something he's going to wait around till, well, we'll just wait till the New Testament comes in, till I send Yahshua, and then we'll have faith. No. He gave him the law, and he also expected faith. Look at Habakkuk. It's always one that's kind of hard to find. After Nahum, and however you want to pronounce it. Some say Habakkuk. Chapter 2 and verse 4. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. Old Testament, chapter 2, verse 4. Just are going to live by faith. Well, all right. I'm seeing more and more a continuity here. Did you know that salvation is found in the Old Testament? You know, there are people who say there was no salvation in the Old Testament. Not until the New Testament came, Yahshua brought through his death the elimination of sin. I should say the penalty of sin. Let's look at Daniel. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 2. And many of them that slept in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Well, there it is. There it is. Turn back to Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 12. You don't think there's salvation in the Old Testament? Therefore prophesy and say unto them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold my people, I will open your graves and cause you to come out of your graves and bring you into the land of Israel, the valley of, you know, the resurrection of dry bones. Hebrews chapter 11. Look at all the patriarchs who are going to be there in the resurrection. They were promised salvation. They didn't have it then, and they couldn't have it then until Yahshua paved the way, but the promise was there. Paul understood that the Old Testament and New Testament are harmonious. And it would be inconceivable to him to go out and teach something else. Inconceivable. Totally, totally contrary to what he was all about. Totally contrary. Well, let's go back to Romans chapter 3. The man was converted on the Damascus Road. We know the account there, how he was knocked down. And would the man have a complete disavowal of everything he had learned after this experience? I don't think so. I think that would be totally, totally inconsistent with why Yahweh chose him in the first place. Because he was a man who grew up at the feet of one of the best teaching priests around, Gamaliel. Teaching what? Yahweh's law. Why would he bother to go through all of this exercise and then, you know, after he falls out of his horse or whatever, somehow has amnesia and forgets all of it? Because now he's in a new, whole new different teaching. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. Romans 3. What advantage, verse 1, has the Jew? Or what profit is there of circumcision? What advantage of choosing Paul? A Hebrew of the Hebrews. What's the advantage of it? Well, verse 2 says, much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of Yahweh. They have an advantage because they understand Yahweh's oracles, his utterances from Mount Sinai and everywhere else where he spoke his word. Greek logion, it means utterances or spoken words, and refers to, obviously, what we see at when the law was given. And look at Acts chapter 7:38. Just digress here for a minute. Acts 7:38, we see another manifestation here of this same idea. 7:38. This is he that was in the assembly in the wilderness. So my Bible says, the King James says, church. Interesting, they would call that a church in the wilderness in the Old Testament. With the angel which spake unto him in Mount Sinai with our fathers, so he was there, who received the lively oracles to give unto us. To give unto us. Wow. The oracles to give unto us. Now, where are we? Are we in Malachi? Are we in Isaiah? Are we in Deuteronomy? No. We're in Acts. We're past the evangels. Joshua's come and gone. We're still talking about receiving the oracles to give to us at Mount Sinai. Same thing. Why is this never taught today? Then we see a man who is well versed in these same things, being given probably the biggest honor, job, to take this truth to the world. Specifically chosen by Yahweh because of his qualifications and because of his, well, nothing less, just his spunk, just because he was a go-getter. Now, why would Paul say they have great advantage, the Jews, because they were given the law, if the law were to be abolished? What was the point of that? Doesn't make any sense. Without the law, the statement's ridiculous. Here we find Paul in a single statement upholding both his heritage and the oracles or utterances of Yahweh. And in Romans 3:31, he asks, then do we make the law void through faith? No, Yahweh forbid. No. Faith does not edge out the law. It doesn't trump the law. It doesn't push it away. It doesn't make it null and void. No. Sure doesn't. Yahweh forbid. We establish the law, he says. Along with that blinding light and that voice that knocked him to the knees on the Damascus Road, another light went on inside this man. Another light. He began to see a whole new reason for his zeal and for his devotion. He could see he was called to something greater. He went from a Pharisaical, ritualistic, holier than thou, better than you, man, to a new creation who was going to get the same treatment that he gave others. Talk about a humbling thing. What he did to others, he got back on him to teach so he would learn. You know, I've always seen that through the scriptures and even in our lives, the things that we do. The old saying, what goes around comes around. You know, it just seems like we get it back. We have to understand. If Yahweh's working with us, we have to understand the error of our ways. And the only way sometimes is to receive the same kind of punishment that may have been, you know, ours to give at one time, if it was wrongly given. Well, he would soon be on the receiving end and learn that there is a price to pay for true obedience. This is the distinction in the new covenant, brethren. Not disobedience to the moral, spiritual laws, but obedience to a greater purpose and for a greater reason, a more intense emphasis. He was a man who was formerly superficial in his life, basically. I think he had a real desire in his own short-sighted way, but it was superficial because it wasn't going to the heart. I can go out here and I can pick at molecules and I can make sure that I don't eat anything unclean. Well, that's basically impossible. I mean, we got to do the best we can, but we cannot be certain that everything we eat is clean. We simply can't do it. But we can make a life out of that. We can make an existence out of that, and that's what these people did. We do the best we can for what we know is clean, and Yahweh's grace would cover the rest if we're sincere about it. Well, this man's prancing around and putting himself up as one of the elite, amounted to zero, and he finally realized that. Over in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 8, this passage here comes right out of Jeremiah 31, and here he explains why obedience is still mandated today. Chapter 8, verse 8. For finding fault with them, who is it? The people. Yahweh said, behold, the days come when Yahweh will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they... Draw a line from them up in verse 8 down to they down in verse 9. It's all about the people. They continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, says Yahweh. Wasn't anything wrong with the law, anything wrong with Yahweh's standard of righteousness. That wasn't the issue. The issue was them. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says Yahweh. I will put my laws into their mind and write them in their hearts. When you write something in your heart, that's the seat of your emotion. That's you. That's in there. And that's what he says he wants. He wants us to react from the heart, with a right heart, willing and wanting to obey. If we haven't gotten there yet, we've got to keep going until we do. Malachi 3:6, Yahweh says he doesn't change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He didn't make a radical change with the coming of Yahshua the Messiah. In actual fact, there isn't this great division between old and new. I hope I've kind of demonstrated that today. That there's not some great curtain that came down and all of a sudden another curtain went up and we have a whole different situation. That's not true. It's not true. It didn't work that way. These were still Jews in Yahshua's time. They were still reading and studying the Old Testament. They were still obeying Yahweh because that's the only Bible they had. There's so many links you could show. I mean, we could sit here and write a book about how the two are compatible. It's just amazing. I don't know how anybody can be so nearsighted as to throw out the New Testament based on nothing, based on no evidence at all. Maybe a few twisted writings of Paul, because they don't understand him. And even Peter warned, hey, watch out. Watch out. This man is pretty intellectual, you might say, and you got to watch it. You don't twist what he says. Remember, he was a Pharisee. You know anything about a priest? Priests were very well educated. He was a Hebrew. Besides, he wasn't a Greek. And yet he's held up as some kind of champion of a Grecianized, Westernized religion that has turned a blind eye to its Hebraic roots. Furthermore, for this new movement, for political and nationalistic reasons, they replaced many things, many teachings in the Scriptures. They replaced Yahweh's name. They replaced the Sabbath with another day that came afterwards. They abolished the law as much as they could, reinterpreted New Testament scriptures. This brings up an important question. If we no longer need to comply with the precepts of the Old Testament, they're no longer necessary, including the Ten Commandments, and they're being thrown out today, aren't they? Because Yahshua came and supposedly did away with all of them. What are the patriarchs in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, who lived by these laws? If salvation is only for a lawless New Testament dispensation, what will the Old Testament patriarchs of Hebrews 11 be doing there? I mean, it was works righteousness, right? No, because we still see the same principles of grace and mercy, you see. They kept the laws of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. What was wrong with that? What was evil with that? Or was it a blessing for them? Yeah, Yahweh says it was a blessing for them, that they would be made worthy for everlasting life. You know, you hear this all the time. You cannot earn your salvation. And we never say we're trying to earn our salvation. But there is a difference. There is a difference between who Yahweh chooses, right? It's like he takes a pool of people, says to Yahshua, you can pick out those you want. And I believe that's predestination. I believe that's what it's talking about. We individually have a choice. But Yahweh has chosen a pool of people who will follow him, and that they're predestined, if they will, to have a part in everlasting life. But like this minister on the radio says, well, they're going to have a charity drive. And they're going to help these poor people. And he says, okay, collect all the money and then have people fill out an application. I want to see who's worthy for this money. Now, according to the common idea of grace, everybody gets it, right? Everybody gets it. But no, this man wants to see those who are most deserving. Nothing wrong with that. Yahweh does the same thing. He looks at our life. You can't earn it. These people couldn't earn, you know, nothing they did could have gotten them any help. It was just grace. Yahweh does the same thing with us. Nothing we do can earn us a position in his kingdom. But he does look at those who are most worthy. Those who have done their best to become a follower of Yahshua. Because he can work with them the most. They can do the most for him. In his kingdom, in their position. When Yahshua says he's going to prepare a place, a position for his people. You don't just pick anybody. That doesn't even make sense. I mean, they go out, corporations or whatever, they go through a long process trying to get the right people qualified to be in a position that's very important. A lot of responsibility. They want educated people who know the ropes. You don't go out and pick some guy off the street who's laying there in the gutter. Doesn't make any sense. Now, there's nothing that anybody could earn to get there, but that isn't the point. That isn't the point. Yahweh could easily take anybody, but he's looking for those who have gone down that narrow way and have made their life an example. Well, here's a man who's doing his best to teach that truth. Knowing that in the prophecies like Isaiah 53 and Jeremiah 31 and others, they knew that Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, who acted for Israel in the Old Testament, would come to earth and die for their sins as well. Think about it. You're looking at it now from a Old Testament prophet's or an Old Testament person's point of view. They had the Savior in their hopes and in their dreams. He just hadn't come yet. But they understand he would. There was a promise. Now the Jews understood that, but they still don't accept the one who came. But they knew. Knowing that, wouldn't it be logical that they would wonder why they had to obey Yahweh's statutes and judgments while their brethren in the New Testament didn't have any of these things placed upon them? They'd be free under grace and wouldn't need to obey or do anything but believe. Does that make any sense to you? There's two standards, one for the Old Testament people, one for the New Testament people. Yahweh's not that way, is he? Yahweh doesn't have, he doesn't deal too duplicitously. He's fair-minded for everybody. The reason they never questioned it is that they knew that the people are judged the same in the Old and the New Testament. Isaiah talked about the fact that Yahshua would come and would be born of a virgin, that he would have a ministry, that he would bear our infirmities. David wrote that Yahshua would speak in parables, be betrayed, be impaled on a tree, be forsaken, rise again. Zechariah foretold that Yahshua would enter into Jerusalem and be sold for 30 pieces of silver. They knew the story. They knew the prophecies. They knew what his purpose was. They had the law as well as the promise of a Savior. We have a Savior as well as the promise contained in Yahweh's laws. Doesn't matter which way you look at it, same thing. Now, when did any of the patriarchs ever say, well, now, the only thing I really need is love? I mean, don't strike us down, Yahweh. I mean, you know, 27,000 people buried in an avalanche, you know, the ground opens up. Don't do that because we have love. We have grace in our hearts. We don't have obligations. I just trust in your grace. You ever see anybody approach Yahweh in that way? We can look at it from either direction we want to. A healthy fear of Yahweh is a good thing. We're soon going to learn to fear in a big way at the appearance of Yahshua the Messiah when all these things start, you know, imploding as we see it setting up now with the problems in the Middle East, with China probably going to go after all the oil they can get, leaving us, you know, in a lurch and wonder why they're going to march on the Middle East. Well, it's pretty obvious what's happening. The conception of most is that Yahshua is so meek and mild, he would never cause any harm to anyone and certainly would never be harsh with anyone. Turn to Luke chapter 14. And I've heard people say that. Oh, you can't believe that he'd come back with a sword. Well, I don't believe anything but what the Bible tells me. And here's what it says. Luke 12, 49. I am come to send fire upon the earth. And what will I if it is already kindled? Fire on the earth. Concept must have, most people have, is of a weak Messiah, powerless. I mean, they see him as a baby when he's born. They see him hanging on a tree at the end. Everywhere they see him, that they manifest him mostly, he's powerless. Can't do anything. And they say, well, you can't believe that he's going to come back with a sword. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's going to. In fact, Revelation 19, verse 14 says the unbelieving nations are going to have a problem when he comes back. They're going to have real problems. And the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in the fine linen, white and clean. And out of his mouth goes a sharp sword. With that, with it he should smite the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron. He's going to force obedience, discipline. And he treads the winepress, the fierceness and wrath of Almighty Yahweh. There's only one way to handle a rebellious person, and that's with force. A child who simply will not listen to you. You know, you can do anything you want to. You can bribe him. You can, promise him this and that, and he just is rebellious as can be. Sometimes a little discipline changes the nature pretty quick. The Bible says that. Well, back to our apostle. Back in Acts 24:14. He said that they considered his faith a sect or a cult, to put it in our, you know, modern terms. Acts 24:14, this is 25 years after Yahshua ascended. Remember, he's gone. 25 years is quite that's a quarter century. So Yahshua's been gone. What did he say? What did Paul say about his beliefs? This I confess unto you, that after the way that they call heresy, so worship I the Elohim of my fathers. They called him a cult, you might say. Believing all things which were written where? In the law and in the prophets. Still believing it's important to obey Yahweh's law. 25 years after Yahshua. And there he is. At one point, if you want to read it, I don't think we're going to have time, but if you look up Acts 21, 24, and through 26, he even went through a Jewish purification rite to prove he was not a teacher of lawlessness. Just to prove that he still believed and practiced Yahweh's laws. He's credited as one who helped institute worship on Sunday. Well, contrary to this fallacy, he advocated the Sabbath and the feast. Acts 25, verse 8 says, neither against the law of the Jews nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I offended anything at all. In Acts 28:17, he says, I have committed nothing against the people or the customs of our fathers. Nothing. We can find proof in a number of passages in Acts. He kept the seventh-day Sabbath and taught it. 13:42-46. 17, verse 2. 18, verse 4. Unleavened bread, Acts 20, verse 6. In Acts 20:16 through 24, verse 11. And I always like to keep these passages in mind because he is being accused of heresy, desecrating the temple, and so forth and so forth. But I want to, and I'm going to have to cut this short, but I want to look at one important thing I found this morning. I had never seen this in the Bible before. I never realized it, what it was saying. Turn to Acts chapter 9. People say, well, we don't believe Paul. We don't believe that he was legitimate. Well, if you're going to say that, then you're going to have to say that a lot of the New Testament has to be thrown out too. Why? Because the disciples accepted him. Look at it. Acts 9, verse 15. But the master said unto him, go thy way. This is Yahshua speaking to Paul after he had been knocked down. For it is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake. This is Yahshua affirming Paul. And it's not in any of the books Paul wrote. Most think Luke wrote this. And yet Yahshua is confirming that he is his disciple to take the truth to the world. Verse 19. And when he had received meat, he was strengthened. And when Paul, certain days with the disciples which were at Damascus, and straightway he preached Messiah in the synagogue, the son of Elohim, but all heard him and were amazed and said, is not this he that destroyed them which called upon this name? I mean, here's the guy that was out chasing everybody down, and now he's saying the same things they were believing and living. And they were afraid of him. Notice verse 25. Then the disciples took him by night and led him down by the wall in a basket. And when Saul was come into Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples. But they were all afraid of him and believed not that he was a disciple. This is what people are saying today. Paul is not a disciple. They said the same thing. The disciples said he's not a disciple. Oh, but Barnabas says, wait a minute, guys. He took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto him how he had seen the master in the way and that he had spoken to him and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Yahshua. And he was with them coming in and out and going out of Jerusalem, and he spake boldly in the name of the master Yahshua and disputed against the Grecians. But they went about to slay him. Which, notice this, when the disciples understood this, they brought him down to Caesarea and sent him forth to Tarsus. Thus begins Paul's ministry. They accepted him. If you're going to say Paul is not acceptable, then you better not accept Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. You better not take any of those books. Or James. Or Peter. Throw them all out. Because they accepted him and you're not. You see? Very important. Yahshua accepted him. And what better proof do you need than that? It said, we just read it. He's going to bear my name to the Gentiles. Yahshua accepted him. People won't. Just amazing. Well, if you want to take that argument, well, he wasn't one of the 12 apostles. Well, neither was Mark or Luke. They weren't apostles either, but you accept their teachings in their books. Come on. Where does the Bible ever say you have to have 12 apostles? It doesn't say that. Talked about Yahshua working with the 12. It doesn't say you have to have 12. That's ridiculous. These are some of the arguments people use. It's just crazy. And they say, well, he was a bragger. You know, I've spoken with tongues more than all you people. So, he's just saying, look, I've been there, I've done it. That's not that big a deal. I can speak more tongues, but that's not what it's all about. Crazy, the things people use. The Old Testament is an account of Yahweh's dealing with man through a certain people. He dealt with other nations only as they came in contact or threatened Israel. He says, I am Yahweh, I change not. And I challenge anyone today to show where Yahweh gave up on Israel, that he's starting over in the New Testament, that he's changed his worship from Hebraic-centered to now Western Romanized, Grecianized. It ain't there. It isn't there. You're not going to find it. And if you want to look the rest of your life, you won't find it in the Scriptures. What you can find is a continuity. Yahweh works only through Israel. Anybody else can be grafted in. That's not a problem. But he's not completely changing his focus to work with somebody else, completely different. Not then, not today, and certainly not in the future. May Yahweh bless you.